Blog Talk Radio.
The Nobel Prize for Peace. At a moment when 17 million
there comes a time when we heed a certain call, when the world must come together as one. There are people dying. Oh, when it's time to lend a hand to life, the greatest gift of all.
We'll keep on crying out for brotherhood,
pretending day by day that the world somewhere soon will change. We all are part of God's great big family. And the truth, you know, love is all we need.
I'm trying to work at the debilitating and grinding problem. My people,
change them first. We say that our own lives, it's true, we make a better life. Well, send them your heart, so they know that someone cares, and their life will be stronger and free. As God has shown us, by turning strong bread, and so we all must lend a helping hand. We are the ones who make a brighter day, so let's start giving.
Oh,
let us joyfully give. We'll save it all alive.
It's true, we make a better day, just you and me.
When it's down and out, the mess is so bad at all.
Baby, just believe.
We are the world.
Children
will be taught. We have a sign of land.
We must also realize that the problems of racial injustice and economic injustice cannot be solved without a radical redistribution of political and economic power.
We read one day, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. But if a man doesn't have a job or an income, he has neither life, nor liberty, and the possibility for the pursuit of happiness. He merely exists.
Estimated that we spend $322,000 for each enemy we kill in Vietnam, while we spend in the so-called war on poverty in America only about $53 for each person classified as poor.
The promises of the Great Society have been shot down on the battlefield of Vietnam, making the poor, white and Negro, bear the heaviest burdens both at the front and at home.
The other thing I want you to understand is this, that it didn't cost the nation one penny to integrate lunch counts. It didn't cost the nation one penny to guarantee the right to vote. But now we are dealing with issues that cannot be solved without the nation spending billions of dollars and undergoing a radical redistribution of economic power.
Yes.
All labor has dignity.
Yes.
But you are doing another thing. You are reminding not only Memphis, but you are reminding the nation that it is a crime for people to live in this rich nation and receive starvation wages.
America's opportunity to help bridge the gulf between the haves and the have-nots. And the question is whether America will do it. There's nothing new.
This is the Dr. Junior movement. We still saying we are soldiers in the army. Stop the killing and save the babies. I'm asking you to join in with the Dr. Martin Luther King Union movement. I want you to be a person of good character. So I want to be involved, Bishop, with the Dr. King movement. I'm working, but I can send a seed for donation. It was shocking to me to see how much money people sent Trump. Trump lied, said he lost, and they sent him over $1 million, $2 million. Those are caught up with sin and things. What I'm saying to you, we're soldiers, and because you're black, you got melanin, you're a soldier in the army. I'm praying for you and you. This is the Dr. King movement, Monday, Martin Luther King movement, Tuesday, Cousin Tencessor. The blood is at the altar. Congress got to step up to the plate. Republicans just giving a gun bill, and they got to ban assault rifles. And I want you to put it in your spirit. I want you to pray it.
I'm praying for the love of this telephone call. But I want to say I'm a soldier. I'm
the Holy Ghost shall hope in me. God bless you tonight. We're talking about Prophet Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Some things he said.
I'll tell you what.
Come on.
For my wife.
It's coming. It's coming true. If what he said right now, it's coming true. Some of the stuff he said is blowing our mind because it's happening right now before our eyes. We said, Dr. King said that, and it happened just like he said it. Okay, so it be a blessing and a door opened up for us that we understand. Dr. King said, it's so real, it's so true, and it's working when he talked about the two Americas. We see that right now. We see it. Don't forget, every Monday, I'm on TV movement. Listen, because it might be a word that God might say to wake you up. Those that are asleep need to be woke.
Thank you, Chair, Mr. Patel, members of the faculty and members of the student body of this great institution of learning, ladies and gentlemen. Now, there are several things that one could talk about before such large concern and enlightened audience. There are so many problems facing our nation and our world that one could just talk anyway. Today I would like to talk mainly about the race problem, since I'll have to rush right out and go to New York to talk about Vietnam tomorrow, and I've been talking about it a great deal this week and weeks before that. News is a subject on which to speak this afternoon, the other America. And I use this subject because there are literally two Americas. One America is beautiful by situation. Then in some sense, America is overflowing with the milk of prosperity and the honey of opportunity. This America is the habitat of By the thousands who protested these conditions, we made it clear that it was ultimately more honorable to accept jail cell experiences than to accept segregation and humiliation. By the thousands of students and adults decided to sit in at segregated lunch counters to protest conditions there. When they were sitting at those lunch counters, they were in reality standing up for the best in the American dream, seeking to take the whole nation back to those wells of democracy, which were dug deep by the founding fathers in the formulation of the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence. Many things were gained as a result of these years of struggle. 1964, Civil Rights Bill came into being after the Birmingham Movement, which did a great deal to subpoena the conscience of a large segment of the nation to appear before the judgment seat of morality on the whole question of civil rights. After the Selma Movement in 1965, we were able to get a Voting Rights Bill. All of these things represented strides. But we must see that the struggle today is much more difficult. It's more difficult today because we are struggling now for genuine equality. It's much easier to integrate a lunch counter than it is to guarantee a livable income and a good solid job. It's much easier to guarantee right to vote than it is to guarantee the right to live in sanitary, decent housing conditions. It is much easier to integrate a public car than it is to make genuine quality integrated education. Reality. So today we are struggling for something which says we demand genuine equality, not merely struggle against extremist behavior toward Negroes. And I'm convinced that many of the very people who supported us in the struggle in the South are not willing to go all the way now. I came to see this very difficult and painfully in Chicago over the last where I've lived and worked. Some of the people who came quickly to march with us in Selma and Birmingham were active around Chicago. And I came to see that so many people who supported morally and even financially what we were doing in Birmingham and Selma were really outraged against the extremist behavior of Bull Connor and Jim Clark toward Negroes, rather than believing in genuine equality for Negroes. And I think this is what we've got to see now, and this is what makes the struggle much more difficult. So as a result of all of this, we see many problems existing today that are growing more difficult. It's something that is often overlooked, but Negroes generally live in worse slums today than 20 or 25 years ago. In the North, schools are more segregated today than they were in 1954 when the Supreme Court's decision on desegregation was rendered. Economically, the Negro is worse off today than he was 15 and 20 years ago. So the unemployment rate among whites at one time was about the same as the unemployment rate among Negroes. But today it's been storm in Raymond was quite that of white. And the average income of the Negro is today 50% less than white. As we look at these problems, we see them growing and developing every day. We see the fact that the Negro economically is facing a depression in his everyday life that is more staggering than the depression of the 30s. The unemployment rate, the nation as a whole, is about 4%. Statistics say from the Labor Department that among Negroes it's about 8.4%. But these are the persons who are in the labor market, who still go to employment agencies to seek jobs, and so they can be calculated. Statistics can be gotten because they are still somehow in the labor market. But there are hundreds of thousands of Negroes who have given up. They've lost hope. They've come to feel that life is a long and desolate corridor for them with exit time. So they no longer go to look for a job. There are those who would estimate that all the discouraged persons would be 6 to 7% in the Negro community. That means that unemployment among Negroes may well be 16%. Among Negroes in some large urban areas, it goes to 30% and 40%. So you can see what I mean when I say that in the
I
do not deserve to exist.
use the philosophical analogy here. Racism is not based on some empirical generalization. It is based rather on an anthropological affirmation. It is not the assertion that certain people are behind culturally or otherwise because of environmental conditions. It is the affirmation that the very being of a people is inferior. This is the great tragedy of it. I should say, however unpleasant it is, we must honestly see and admit that racism is still deep-rooted all over America. Still deep-rooted in the North, still deep-rooted in the South. I just need me to say something about another discussion that we need a great deal. And that is the so-called white backlash. I would like to only say to you that the white backlash is merely a new name for an old phenomenon. Not something just came into being because of black power, about Negroes engaged in riots and what, for instance. The fact is that the state of Alabama voted a firehouse and scared out of distance before anybody shouted black power, or before anybody rioted and rocked. May well be the touch of black power and riots and rocks in the Harlems and the other areas are the consequences of the white backlash rather than the cause of it. But it is necessary to see that there has never been a single violent monistic common commitment on the part of the vast majority of white Americans. The whole question of civil rights and the whole question of racial equality. This is something that truth impels all men of goodwill to admit. It is said on the establishment that America is the home of exile. It doesn't take as long to realize that America has been the home of its tried exiles from Europe. It has not been sustained from the maternal care and concern for its black exiles from Africa. It is no wonder that in one of his songs, the Negro could sing out, "Sometimes I feel like a motherless child." What great estrangement, what great sense of rejection caused the people to emerge with such a metaphor as they looked over their lives. What I'm trying to get across is that our nation has constantly taken a positive step forward on the question of racial justice and racial equality. Over and over again at the same time, made certain backward steps. This has been the persistence of the so-called white backlash. In 1863, he's a cardiovascular surgeon who's leading the Justice for Garvey effort. It's great to have you with us.
But at the same time, the nation refused to give him land.
So tell us what you're doing.
Freedom meaning. At that same period, America was giving millions of acres of land in the West and the Midwest, which meant that America was willing to undergird its white peasants from Europe with an economic score that would make it possible to grow and develop. Refused to give that economic floor to its black peasant, so to speak. This is why Frederick Douglass would say that emancipation for the Negro was freedom to hunger, freedom to the winds and rains of heaven, freedom without roots to cover their heads. He went on to say that it was freedom without bread to eat, freedom without land to cultivate, it was freedom and famine at the same time. It does not stop there. In 1875, the nation passed the Civil Rights Bill, refused to enforce it. In 1964, the nation passed a weaker Civil Rights Bill,
Even to this day, that bill has not been totally enforced in all of its dimensions. They inherited a new day of concern for the poor, poverty stricken, for the disadvantaged, and brought into being a poverty bill. But at the same time, it puts such little money into the program that it still hardly and still remains hardly a bit generous of inhabitants. White politicians in suburbs talk eloquently against open houses, and in the same breath contend that they are not racist. All of this, and all of these things tell us that America has been backlashing on the whole question of basic constitutional and God-given rights for Negroes and other disadvantaged groups for more than 300 years. So these conditions, the systems of widespread poverty, slums, and of tragic conditions in schools and other areas of life, exile from Africa. It is no wonder that in one of his sorrow songs, the Negro sing out, "Sometimes I feel like a motherless child. What great estrangement, what great sense of rejection.
Gonna make a locomotive. Sometime you might start by making a face again. Remember, other people in the world started with that. 200 years ago, the Japanese did not even have a gun. Look at them now. Someone challenged them to come out of the lethargy of their culture and meet the challenge of a changing world. The intelligence of a people can be measured to what extent they adjust and understand the nature of change. We, as a people, are going to have to prove ourselves equal to the nature of change. And to prove yourself equal to the nature of change, you have to prove yourself equal to the nature of revolution. Realize revolution is all, it's not always killing people. Your own life, the life around you. Do it for yourself what you've been expecting other people to do for you. You cannot start by hoping to have a great man around you. You can take the teachings of Marcus Garvey, especially in African fundamentals. You can look at the documents compiled by Professor Hill, compiled by Professor Martin, Tony Martin, and other scholars who found different approaches to Marcus Garvey. You can make up your mind that you're going to have to stop those small, selfish people worrying about pennies, sororities, and fraternities, and a whole lot of things, wasting your time. You're going to have to learn that everything that touches your life must contribute to your liberation or be thrown into the ash can of history. I advise that you start with a mirror. Stand before that mirror, like what you see. Say to the person staring at you, you and I are going to change the world. We're not going to wait for Mom to join us. We're not going to wait for tomorrow, because we're going to start right now. Thank you. you're gonna ride in the car and hear me. But he's still a genius. He's still a genius because he sits and he just comes forth with the information. But yet he has got pride to leave his seat. Always willing to come here to the house of our church to give us the word. Let us stand and give a hearty welcome and African welcome to our great elder statesman, Dr. John Henry Clark.
Life and his religion is a bomb without spirituality. And
if you want to understand what I'm saying. Don't put in the lemon and lemonade. Whatever you got. Glass of water. So when he produces a bomb called religion, he's producing a power apparatus to capture your mind, give you the illusion that he is religious. And it is an element of control. And what you fail to understand is that you got what he is missing. You got religion with religion without spirituality is a worthless form. And you have spirituality before he had the form. We have to look at ourselves. Then we have to look at ourselves before we know we knew he existed. Now use your imagination a little bit. Because over half of human history was over before anyone knew that anyone in the world called Europeans existed. Over half of all human history was over. Didn't even know he was in the world. You had already created spirituality. You'd already created the city. You'd already created dynasty. You had already recognized something that he still refused to recognize. That no society can be truly great unless it also uses the mind of the female population in the partnership with its men. All of this has happened now before you know he was existing. The female god had already been created.